I'm standing on the shore of the Indian River, and I'm surrounded by thousands of pink and chum salmon getting ready to spawn. From here, you can't tell where these fish come from. Some of these fish come from the wild, and some from hatchery programs in Southeast Alaska. It's no secret that a small percentage of salmon stray from their home streams. It's a part of their natural strategy for survival. But if too many strays from neighboring hatcheries end up here, both wild and hatchery salmon compete for oxygen. Hypoxia is one potential problem, and another is crossbreeding.
Theoretical genetics suggest that there will be a deleterious effect from strays in the stream.
Steve Reifenstuhl is the general manager of one of Alaska's largest hatchery programs, Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association.
And there's been lots of research in the lower 48 that demonstrates this, but it's not analogous to what happens in Alaska. So we felt we really need to look at specifically Alaska's program and Alaska salmon stocks, and that's what we're doing.
Hatchery operators in the state of Alaska created the Hatchery Wild Interaction Study in 2010. This 11-year project focuses on pink and chum salmon, and this year, the Sitka Sound Science Center is leading the research in Southeast Alaska. The study has three questions. What is the genetic makeup of pink and chum salmon? What is the stray rate of hatchery salmon? And what impact do hatchery strays have on wild salmon's fitness or ability to reproduce? Corey Dick is a member of the Juneau field crew.
We're going to hike the streams. We're doing two streams, and we're going to hike them every day. And usually when they spawn, they die. So we'll find them on the banks, and we'll grab them, and we will cut them open and collect a DNA sample from their heart, so just a piece of heart tissue. And then we'll collect two bones called the otoliths, which are basically their eardrums. And that'll help determine where they're originally from because they put markings on them. And then, so like if it's a wild salmon, they won't have any markings. If it's from a hatchery, it'll be having some markings. And then we'll take a couple scale samples to figure out how old they are.
This data is then sent to a lab in Anchorage, where they can make a genetic database of the salmon they collect. With cutting-edge genetic analyses, they are able to follow the lineages of the salmon and determine if hatchery fish have an impact on the viability of wild stocks.
I'm definitely really excited about this project. I love being outside, and Alaska is an awesome place. My first time up here, and I already love it. I am a little nervous because it's going to be very intense every single day, basically walking up miles and miles up and down streams, over boulders and swift water. So it's a little nerve-wracking thinking of the dangers, but that's what makes it exciting, right?
Technicians like Dick have been collecting samples from thousands of salmon over the last 6 years. The final results of the project will not be completed until 2024, but Steve Reifenstuhl has a hunch on what genetic effect hatchery salmon have on wild stocks.
I believe that salmon, like humans, are very plastic, are very resilient. And so I think what we're going to find is no ill effect. And I'd say the purists believe that there is going to be an effect. And that's kind of what it boils down to.
Sam Raybong, the aquaculture section chief at the Department of Fish and Game, believes that Alaska's strict policies themselves are very plastic, preventing many risks.
I think we have the best salmon resource in the world, and we're pretty proud of our existing fishery enhancement program. But we're going to continue to ground truth it. We're going to continue to evaluate it and make sure that it's really as good as we think it is.
Salmon are big business in Alaska, and so are hatcheries. Whatever the outcome of the Hatchery Wild Interaction Study, the economic stakes are huge. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Stephanie Fisher.